Now on BBC Radio 4, Nicholas Parsons invites Lisa Tarbuck, Graham Norton, Tim Rice and Paul Merton to speak for a minute without hesitation, deviation or repetition.
Welcome to Just a Minute. Hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country but around the world, but also to welcome to the programme four exciting, dynamic personalities who are going to play this game. And they are, seated on my right, Paul Merton and Tim Rice, and seated on my left, Lisa Tarbuck and Graham Norton. Please welcome all four of them. Beside me sits Hayley Sterling, who's going to help me keep the score. She'll blow the whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Shaw Theatre in the Euston Road in London. We're usually in the Radio Theatre, but they've sent us out on tour. And this is as far as they could reach.
I think it's the lead on the plugs that only goes as far.
And we're going to begin the show this week with Graham Norton, and who better? Graham, the subject here is the Cornish pasty. Whoa! Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
If someone was to put a gun to my head and ask my favourite convenience food, I would think, what a rough farmer's market I've come to. But then, I would consider...
Tim challenged.
I was going to challenge for hesitation, but I think he was just milking the applause, quite rightly, Graham.
The applause.
I withdraw my challenge.
I think you should, because I think he was keeping good.
It was brutal.
You can't withdraw it. It's now established, and Graham gets a point because it was an incorrect challenge, and he keeps going. There are 51 seconds still available, Graham. The Cornish pasty is starting now.
The Cornish pasty or the Scotch egg? I'm like Meryl Streep in Sophie's Choice. I can't decide which is more delicious. I do love the sausage meat surrounding the egg, especially if they manage to keep the yolk running.
Tim challenge.
A pair of eggs. Scotch egg and then...
A Scotch egg, yes.
Sorry, Graham. Oh, right.
They are very Moorish, though.
They are.
So, Tim, this time you are correct, and you've got 36 seconds to tell us something about the Cornish pasty, starting now.
Despite centuries of research, no one has ever correctly ascertained what actually goes into a Cornish pasty. The outer crust is so hard to penetrate that world experts, working in teams night and day...
Paul challenge.
Hesitation, sadly.
Paul, a correct challenge. You have a point for that, of course. 21 seconds available. The Cornish pasty starting now.
Well, in the old day, you used to take a bit of gun and back you out in the field. Oh, that's an insulting accent. That's just insulting.
Oi, oi, oi. You've been challenged.
I know, I'm not surprised. No.
Tim, you challenge.
Repetition of...
He's right.
It did sound repetitious.
It certainly did.
So I give you the benefit of the doubt. Tim, a correct challenge. The Cornish pasty is with you. 17 seconds still available, starting now.
The first gang of chaps to conquer the Eiger...
Oh, Paul challenge.
Well, it was hesitation.
It was a hesitation, Paul. So you've got it back again.
Cracking under the strain.
And you've got the Cornish pasty back. No, you haven't got the Cornish pasty back. You've got the subject of the Cornish pasty.
If only we did. Wouldn't that be fantastic if there were actual Cornish pasties here? Sorry, I'm just...
I think it's a lovely thought. 14 seconds still available, Paul. The Cornish pasty is starting now.
If there are any members of the audience now who crave the Cornish pasty, all they have to do is leave the theatre, turn left towards St Pancras, and if they move into the bowels of that station, they will find a shop that sells the genuine Cornish pasty.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point, and it was Paul Merton, so he's naturally the lead at the end of the round. And Lisa Tarbuck, we'd like you to begin this next round. The subject is home improvement. Can you tell us something about that in this game? Starting now.
I like a little bit of home improvement, and I heard my mother relating a story that a friend of hers from years ago said, Pauline, you've always got to do one big thing towards the house every year. So I try and maintain my home, whether it's painting a wall or, in fact, like I've done the beginning of this year, putting in a new terrace.
Graham challenge.
Oh, repetition of year.
Oh, yes.
Sure, I won't tell you what it looks like then.
41 and now.
So, well, listen, Graham, you've got him with 41 seconds to go on. Home Improvement, starting now.
Home Improvement strikes me as a bit of a misnomer because, in fact, before you improve your home, your place of residence becomes much worse. Covered in dust, the things that were there are now gone, but the new stuff hasn't arrived. There's no water in your bathroom, the mirrors are gone, your clothes are in a big bin bag. And yet, this is home improvement. It also takes much longer than anyone ever tells you. 4 to 5 working days, or apparently about 365, I've noticed, whenever I've in contracted somebody to do something in my home. Home, of course, I can say more than once because home improvement is the subject. I just wanted to point that out because some of you are probably thinking, he's saying home a lot.
Tim, you've challenged.
Deviation come desperation.
Yeah. What a desperation.
That could be a lonely night for so many of us.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good challenge. All right. Tim, you have 4 seconds on home improvement starting now.
I would like to say that the only thing I care about when improving a home...
Right, so Tim Rice has taken the lead at the end of that round, because they're getting extra point for speaking as the whistle went. And, Tim, it's your turn to begin. Oh, I think you know something about this one. Che Guevara. 60 seconds, starting now.
Che Guevara once marketed a form of insecticide in Buenos Aires when he was a medical student, and it never caught on. So he thought, stuff this for a game of soldiers, I shall become a revolutionary and conquer several evil governments, single-handed, or possibly with the help of the odd pal of mine such as Fidel Castro, who at the time was hiding in bushes and underneath water in lakes in Cuba, hoping to conquer...
Graham challenged.
And now, hiding underwater is drowning, Tim. That's just silly talk now, Tim. Fidel never hid underwater.
He might have dived under, but he would have come up again, wouldn't he?
He'd have to. You couldn't hide.
No. Well, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
I think... What benefit of the doubt? It is drowning.
Well, listen, look at it logically. He could have dived in and stayed a bit under the water for a bit.
Yeah.
And then he come up further down and there's a pit.
He probably had a straw, a reed.
Or perhaps a piece of bamboo.
Yes,
yes, I withdraw it now.
No, you've got it. You have the benefit of the doubt, you have the subject, you have 35 seconds. Che Guevara, starting now.
Che Guevara was a childhood hero of mine, and in fact, his beard has inspired my new look. Unless I've shaved it off by the time this goes out, in which case I couldn't care less about Che Guevara's beard. Oh, I've said that twice.
And Graham, it wouldn't have mattered if you had shaved it off, because this is radio, they wouldn't have seen you.
I know, but...
Omnipresent.
Yeah, but it's about the truth. It's about the truth.
Nisha?
2 beards.
Yes, there were 2 beards. Right. 22 seconds for you, and the subject, Lisa, is Che Guevara, starting now.
I had the pleasure of going to Cuba years ago, courtesy of the Communist Party, which was an exciting thing straight away. And in walking in Havana, I was pleasantly surprised by Che Guevara's trousers under glass outside the National Museum. So imagine my friend Lisa Clark and I studying hard the green trousers of said...
Poor trousers,
oh,
yes.
No!
Unlikely as it sounds, the repetition of trousers.
Yeah.
Yes.
2 beards, 2 trousers.
2 beards, 2 trousers.
We're building him slowly, ladies and gentlemen.
And, Paul, you've got in with 1 second to go.
I share your disappointment.
No, the audience is divided. Some of them were clapping. Yeah. 1 second, Paul, on Che Guevara, starting now.
Che Stadium.
Paul, you're taking the lead at the end of that round, just ahead of Tim, Graham and Lisa in that order. And, Paul, it's your turn to begin. How to eat an oyster.
Oh, hello.
Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Well, it all depends where you get your oyster from. If it's directly from the sea, somebody has to shut them.
Graham,
sorry, that was an actual mistake.
Was it a mistake?
Yeah, well, I genuinely didn't mean to press it.
Sort of like a Freudian slip.
Yes, it was. It was some sort of... I apologise, I'm really, really sorry.
It's not a game to play if you have spasms.
And apparently I'm developing them. I'm so sorry.
Well, all right. Well, as you're so lovely happy. And we all enjoy...
It won't
enjoy,
happen again.
Well, as we all enjoy your beer...
Oh, sorry, I did that again. I'll step away from the buzzer now, sorry.
In a moment, I'll give you bonus points. For
no,
that.
Don't.
Paul, carry on. 56 seconds to go. Oh, get a point because he was interrupted. He must be. That's the rules of the game, isn't it? How to eat an oyster starting now?
Shucking them, that's the trouble. Very difficult indeed because you have to get the knife in, or indeed some people favour a spoon, but trying to prise apart the two pieces of shell is quite difficult. But once inside...
Tim, challenge.
Two difficults?
Yes.
Yes, well done,
very
Tim.
Very honest of you, Paul,
well,
I listened.
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Yes, 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 yes. And, Tim, you've got him with 44 seconds to go on how to eat an oyster, starting now.
The shell's the hard bit to get down your gullet. I've tried this many times. The bit inside is pretty soft, but I've never got there because outside every oyster is a socking great hard bit, which... Oh. I've just lost the will.
Graham, you challenge first.
Stoppiation.
Yes.
It's hardly Attenborough, is it? It's socking great hard bit. No.
It really
the oyster's great big hard bit.
It really is a very difficult subject to speak on, isn't it? Graham, you've got him in 29 seconds on how to eat an oyster, yeah. Starting now.
Already I feel stupid because this subject suggests there is a wrong way to eat an oyster. I mean, do people shove it in their ear? What are they doing? I feel like I should know the correct way to eat an oyster, but as far as I know, you just...
Lisa Chant.
There's a lot of knowing.
Yeah, a lot of knowing, yes.
I was just trying to talk.
I know. I know.
And you repeated a word.
Yes, I did.
And Lisa heard it. She got in first. 14 seconds, Lisa. How to eat an oyster, starting now.
I adore oysters, and how I eat mine is to release the muscly bit in the middle and then cover it with a little bit of Tabasco and some very finely chopped shallots. Then I tilt my head and place...
I must tell our listeners that Lisa actually tilted her head right back as she said that. Oh, so gosh. If you lost a couple of words, it was her being very unradio. But you've got another point, Lisa. You move forward. You're still in fourth place, but you move forward. Actually, there's only one point between all of them at this particular time. Graham, with you again. Making a good impression. That's the subject. Tell us something about it in this game, starting now.
Making a good impression isn't that difficult. Step one, wash. No one likes a smelly fellow person. I remember working in restaurants, and for some reason it was my job to tell the other waiters when they had got past the stage of mild aroma into stench. It wasn't normally to do with the amount of washing that went on. It normally...
Paul Challenge.
Sort of hesitation, I thought.
Sort of hesitation.
Sort of. Not
sort
quite.
Of.
I don't
not
think quite. It was quite enough. No, no.
Sure.
I think he was...
Really?
He was still keeping... Yeah, he was. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, Graham. And, Paul, I will redress the balance if I can later on to you in your favour. 35 seconds still with you, Graham, on making a good impression, starting now.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank Nicholas Parsons for keeping me on the subject of how to make a good impression, because I've quite a lot more to say about it. So, let me return.
Tim Challenge.
I mean, that was deviation. That was just grovelling. Yeah. It was...
No, I was demonstrating. I was demonstrating how to make a good impression.
Sickening.
I was making a good impression on Nicholas.
Over on this side of the stage, yeah. The right-hand side of the stage, we felt that was...
Is that the right-hand side?
Yeah. It depends where you're looking at it from.
But you're not playing as a team?
No.
No. But no, I disagree entirely, Tim, because he was trying to make a good impression by flannelling me and...
When was the last time you were flannelled? Apart from it...
You want to know as an adult or a child?
Well, whatever comes to memory first of all.
Well, as a child, I was regularly flannelled. Come on, wash your face now. Let the flannel go. And I don't know what I'm talking about. It's just great. 24 seconds are available, Graham, on making a good impression, starting now.
If someone wants to make a good impression on me, they just walk straight up and say, "Hey, Graham, that new beard makes you look a lot older." Then they'll try and talk around that and pretend they weren't insulting me. My mother said she was worried that people would say, because the moustache doesn't match the rest of said hair on face, that it's darker. She remarked that she feared...
So Graham Norton within speaking as the whistle went and gained that extra point. And I should explain to my listeners, it's only a limited time as he sported this amazing beard and moustache. And I think it's very attractive.
Here we go.
There we go. Lisa, we're with you to begin. The subject is Blackpool Tower. Tell us something about that edifice in this game, starting now.
As a child, I've looked upon Blackpool Tower with excitement because my father used to play the summer seasons up there in Blackpool, and we'd always take a house near the dunes, and you could always...
Tim Chance.
I'm sorry, Lisa.
Always isn't.
Yeah, and hesitation.
Just one thing led to another.
Tim, you've got another point, and you've got the Blackpool Tower, 47 seconds, starting now.
Blackpool Tower is an extremely impressive building by any standards. It stands up well against the Eiffel Tower.
Lisa challenged.
I felt that was a little bit of a hesitation.
No, I think it was a bit of a hesitation.
I thought it was more dramatic effect.
It was certainly dramatic
like
effect.
Breathing from where I was sitting.
It was. I mean, if you think about it, a little bit like the... it was breathing, but...
No, it was enough to say hesitation, Lisa. And you have the benefit of the doubt, and you have 40 seconds on Blackpool Tower, starting now.
The Blackpool Tower is, of course, exactly like the Eiffel Tower, and it...
Poor challenge.
Hesitation.
Yes, it was, but it's nothing like the Eiffel Tower, actually.
It's a bit like it.
Oh, yeah. It's a tower. Let's give it that.
And it's tall. Let's give it that.
Yes!
But it's in Blackpool, not Paris.
Paul, 34 seconds still available. Blackpool Tower, starting now.
In the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, Blackpool was where people went for their holidays in this country. If they lived in the north, they would be proud to go to this magnificent seaside resort where there would be many piers, where shows featuring Ken Dodd, Jimmy Tarbuck, Morecambe and Wise, Hope and Keane, Nicholas Parsons with his original act, Disraeli, and it was a magnificent journey all the way through.
Graham Chan.
Repetition of magnificent.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, totally. Listen, Graham. Yeah. With 10 seconds available, Graham, Blackpool Tower, starting now.
Blackpool Tower is precisely 490 feet tall. It contains 156 tons of steel. These facts came to me very easily because I know that... I can't believe no one challenged that.
You happen to be right. You were right.
No. Just saying enough confidence. Right? I mean, they didn't know either, so they couldn't dare challenge, did they?
Bluff.
Someone will now try and write in and say, why didn't they challenge him? Because he got the wrong figures. Doesn't matter. You kept going to the whistle when Graham got an extra point and you've taken the lead at the end of that round. Tim, with you to begin now. English breakfast. Tell us something about that magnificent subject. No, that magnificent meal. Just tell us something about English breakfast. Starting now.
There is nothing like an English breakfast, except possibly another English breakfast. If you order two, they will both be fairly alike the other. I wish I hadn't got going with that particular aspect of this plot, but I shall continue undeterred. Sausages, tomatoes, bacon, eggs, black pudding...
Paul challenge.
Hesitation.
Baked beans.
Oh. Yeah, that's what you were searching for, but you hesitated, so Paul's got him 38 seconds on English breakfast, starting now.
The English breakfast is known as many things, depending on which country you're eating it in. In Ireland, they call it the Irish breakfast. It's constituently and immensely the same thing. It covers mushrooms, black pudding, white of the same variety, and also onions sometimes, and a little bit of hash browns. I was always disappointed by the ingredients of that aforementioned dish. I thought it might have some drugs inside, but unfortunately, neither that or small girl guides are indeed on the menu, because... As I mentioned earlier, they are made of potato browned on the outside.
Lisa Challenge.
You know what? I thought you were going to go into
it's brownies. It's bubble and bubble
again.
All over again,
yeah.
Is it?
Mm.
Ooh. I think you must remember it was weeks ago. How can you forget? You remember?
Right.
There was a controversy about it, do you remember?
So, incorrect challenge.
That was an error, definitely an error. I think it's because you went about girl guides. I thought you were going to go brownies.
Oh.
And you'd said hash brownies.
Yes.
That's right.
So I'm being... You challenged me on something I might be about to say. No. This game gets harder by the degree. Psychic challenges. Yes.
They're not illegal, but no. They don't work in this game. But incorrect challenge, so Paul, another point to you, and 10 seconds still available. English breakfast starting now.
The first time I sat down and had a proper English breakfast, I was 20 years old. The gentleman sitting opposite me had prepared the most magnificent array of dishes. As I looked...
So Paul Merton was then speaking as a whistle went and gained that extra point. He's now taken the lead, one ahead of Graham Norton, and they're two or three ahead of Tim Rice and Lisa Tarbuck in that order. And Paul, we're back with you to begin. The subject is the first man on the moon. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
The first man on the moon was, of course, Neil Armstrong, and I wondered what was pounding away inside his head as he took those steps down towards the surface. Each boot on his foot, well, only one. Each boot on his foot.
You can see how he gets you this game. It's very difficult, there. You know, you can slip up on people's names and boots and feet and anything.
Each boot on each foot.
So, who challenged who?
Yeah, well, there we are.
So, you challenged.
I think I did.
Yeah,
yes,
Tim
you did,
me.
Right. The first man on the moon, Tim, 48 seconds, starting now.
I remember that evening in July 1969 when we were all huddled around our little black-and-white television watching the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong, descend those steps which my colleague Paul Merton described so beautifully, majestically, magnificently and colourfully as Neil's feet went...
No. Paul challenged.
No, I was wrong, because it was Neil Armstrong, then Neil's the second time, so yeah, it was plural,
right,
and singular,
well,
but
well.
There we are. It's a very clever trick if you can make it work.
Let it
but, I mean,
go.
I don't know if it counts whether I buzzed him before he got to the... No, it doesn't matter.
Then,
no, I was wrong. I was definitely wrong.
I think he was right, actually.
No, no.
I had not intended to be devious in the way
Neil's.
He was suggesting.
Yeah.
No, he's being very generous, because we didn't all hear the apostrophe S at the end. So,
it was.
Well done. Tim, it was an incorrect challenge. 29 seconds still available. The first man on the moon starting now.
Every time I look up at the moon, I think it is absolutely phenomenal and extraordinary and amazing that Neil...
Graham challenge.
Two amazings.
Yes, they were amazing before.
We were about to get Neil again.
You were. No, I was going to call him Neely.
Oh, no!
His close friends called him Neely. Buzz called him Neely.
Yeah.
So, Graham, Neely's you've got name. 21 seconds. Tell us something about the first man on the moon starting now.
Given that in 2015 I can't get a mobile phone signal in my kitchen, I find it very hard to believe a man got to the moon in 1969. I'm not one of those conspiracy theories people, but I do sort of think they were just in a television studio somewhere in Los Angeles going...
And Paul challenge.
Repetition.
I only said that once.
Yeah, we went on a bit though.
No, he didn't.
No, the first bit was like the end bit.
It didn't go on very long.
No.
I think we could say that was just
sure.
a single.
Yeah.
Right. So benefit, and also there are only 2 seconds to go.
Yes.
So benefit of the doubt, Graham. And I'll address the balance, if I can, to you, Paul, later. 2 seconds. The first man on the moon, Graham, starting now.
Spare a thought for the poor creature left inside the rocket.
So, Graham Norton, speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he's now taken the lead ahead of Paul Merton, Tim Rice and Lisa Tarbuck in that order. And, oh, we've only got time for one more round.
Well faked.
Oh, you are lovely. So let me give you the situation as we do it. Just to remind you, when Graham Norton's in the lead, just ahead of Paul Merton, only 2 points, but then Tim Rice and Lisa Tarbuck in that order. And, Graham, we're back with you to begin, and the subject is My Only Regret. I'm sure you've got more than one. But tell us about my... It should be my major regret, shouldn't it, really? Anyway, they've put down here My Only Regret, starting now.
Anyone glancing at my CV might, even at a casual glance, assume that I have many regrets. And in fact, the difficulty would be choosing my only regret. But au contraire, lovely people sitting in rows for no good reason in the Shaw Theatre on the Euston Road, I have no regrets. It's not about looking back. It's about surging forward. It's about living the life ahead of you rather than dwelling on history. Get behind me, past mistakes. I look to you in the days ahead to teach me how to live properly. Oh, I've made mistakes, don't get me wrong, but I intend to not repeat them. It is for that reason I say my only regret is that I didn't learn this earlier in life. As a child, perhaps, going to school in a small boot and...
So Graham Norton started the subject and went with great style and panache for 60 seconds without being interrupted and without hesitating, repeating himself or deviating. And he gained that extra point for speaking as the whistle went and gained a bonus point for not being interrupted. And he has increased his lead slightly, and at the end of the round he's ahead of all the others. So we say, Graham, you are our winner this week. So it only remains for me to say thank you to these four excellent players of the game. Paul Merton, Tim Rice, Lisa Klarbuck, Graham Norton. I thank Hayley Sterling, who's helped me with the score. She's blown her whistle charmingly when the 60 seconds elapse. We're grateful to Victoria Lloyd, who is our producer. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're indebted to this lovely audience here in the Shoreham Theatre, who've cheered us on our way magnificently. So from the audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and the team, goodbye. Tune in again the same time when we play Just a Minute!
And Nicholas Parsons comes back to play more Just a Minute at the same time next week when Paul Merton is joined on the panel by Sheila Hancock, Mike McShane and Pam Ayres.